People seeing success, it's like that kind of dumb chart you see on a teacher's wall where it's like an iceberg and the
That's
success
right.
and everything
That's right.
all the hard work.
That's
and,
right.
And a lot of your videos you talk about like from 06 to 07, how like you started to get into the content game, not knowing that's what it is at the time, but the struggle of doing 365 days before you get a call to go on a late night show. Like,
yes.
People don't understand, like your wife's looking at you, your friends yep. are looking at you, and you're like, yo, Gary, what the hell is he doing, man? Like he's just out here acting crazy.
And especially back then, YouTube was 4 months old when I started my show. Like what you're doing now, people are like, oh, podcasts can hit. Like yeah. it's known. When I was like, I'm doing this, people thought I lost my mind.
Attention is the number one asset.
I'm on Twitch.
I love that. Let's go, Twitch. Such a pleasure. Such a pleasure. Glad we made it. Glad we made it. So happy to be here. So happy to be with all of you.
What's up, man?
What's going on?
Such a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
What's up, man? Such a pleasure. Maha, I know you. What's up, man? One, two, one, two.
Man, to kick it off, I have to say, like, you've been a very indirect influence in, like, the ascendance of bussin'. Just, I came upon you probably, a lot of your stuff was getting in front of me, like, my first or second year in the league.
Yeah.
But just to give you those flowers, like, it's
so humbling. Thank you, brother.
Podcast.
Thank you for saying that. It means, you know, this whole era now, because I was in it early, like, it feels crazy to have a positive impact on people from afar, and so I appreciate that. Makes me feel super nice.
Yeah,
I'm pumped to be on the show, by the way.
Yeah, you talk about like obviously people seeing success. It's like that, like a kind of dumb chart you see like a teacher's wall where it's like an iceberg, and the
That's right.
success and everything
is right.
all the hard work.
That's
and,
right.
And a lot of your videos you talk about like from 06 to 07, how like you started to get into the content game, not knowing that's what it is at the time. But the struggle of doing 365 days before you get a call to go on a late night show. Like,
yes.
People don't understand, like, your wife's looking at you, your friends yep. are looking at you, and you're like, yo, Gary, what the hell is he doing, man? Like, he's just out here acting crazy.
And especially back then.
Yeah.
When I told everybody I'm gonna do this, YouTube was 4 months old when I started my show. Mm-hmm. So, like, it wasn't like people, like, what you're doing now, people are like, oh, podcasts can hit.
Right.
Like, yeah. it's known. When I was like, I'm doing this, people thought I lost my mind. Like, it can't be overstated.
Yeah.
Like, my best friend Brandon and my dad, and my cousin Bobby, the core four of us who were running the liquor store at the time, I was the guy. I was buying the wine, I was selling the wine, I was marketing, I was on the floor, and now I'm taking all this time to record in front of a camera and put it on the internet. That would be like me telling you right now, listen, the three of us have to go to Mars, set up a lemonade stand, mm-hmm. and it's gonna work. It was that far-fetched to them. And so, yeah, but for me, my whole life, you know, this may really resonate with you and a lot of the audience. I'm almost like reverse Allen Iverson. Like, I like the practice. Mm-hmm. I like the crap that no one sees.
That's a great reference.
It's a really important part to me. I enjoy when it's small. Like, I'm doing Twitch right now. Live streaming. Are you doing it right now, actually, Dustin? You got a little something in and out. But like in my office, I'm sitting in my office doing 10 hours of meetings and Twitch is running in the background, 90% on mute.
Yeah.
And people are watching it, but not a lot. Like, why would you watch that? It's like almost ASMR for entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. I unmute a bunch, I do questions, I give away stuff, we hang out. But I watch it, I'm like, okay, hundreds of people are watching now, but I already know my brain. Tens of thousands of people are gonna watch me go about my business day in 6 years. And like that gets me off more than anything. I love the 100 views, not the millions of views I have on social.
Right.
I'm almost like, it's almost why I think I love the Jets so much. The chase to finally get it is more interesting to me than getting it. When the Yankees won the World Series, I stopped watching the Yankees.
Yeah.
But like the climb, the behind the scenes.
Yeah, there's multiple layers to everything you just said, because we can go into the Jets thing where it's like, when you finally get to the result, your process has been all the way a part of like, is the fulfillment going to be there, or are you going to look back and be like, damn, the process was truly the best part?
I already know the process is the best part.
But you haven't bought it yet.
I know.
But sitting there,
I genuinely
with a green suit on,
yeah.
signing the piece of paper,
yeah.
and you're going to be like, that process was tight. You're going to be like,
I believe that is, at 48, mm-hmm. I believe that I'm very confident telling you that I already know. Like, to the point where, like, I'm going to say this may sound weird to a lot of people. I'm curious if I get some DMs or emails about this from people that have experienced this. I'm actually so extreme on process over the thing mm-hmm. that I sometimes almost get, like, this weird, not depression, but, like, I don't know. I'm going to try to articulate it because it's what I do, but, like, I'm almost weirdly scared of how not great that moment might be. Almost a letdown. Like, I don't know. I'm so into the chase that getting it is like, all right. Like I don't, it's actually, I think it's a little fucked up, and I'm working on this. I'm trying to be better at smelling the roses and enjoying. My brother, who's 11 years younger than me, has been very wise on this with me my whole life. Like, we would just do these things when he was 22. We started the company, and like a lot of great things have happened over the last 14 years. And like, he kind of, he's like, bro, like good things would happen. We sold a piece of our company to Stephen Ross, who owns the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
That was like a meaningful event at the time.
University of Michigan guy.
That's right. Big event, like changed the course. Mainly I was very enthralled to do it because I knew for AJ it would be money that really changed his life at that point, being in his young 20s. Like, it was a real catalyst. Like, it hits the bank account. It looks weird when you've got those kind of dollars in your account and you've had it.
Yeah, looks like a phone number with an.
You know, it's, and I was like, all right. Like, I don't know. Like, I didn't even, like, I don't know. Like, it's very consistent in my life. I just, I'm obsessed with the chase. And I think a lot of people listening can resonate. Other people enjoy the winning over and over. And it is about the trophies and the success. I like the process. And by the way, I'd like to be a little bit better about smelling the roses and enjoying these big moments. I just like the game. I like the practice. I like the grind.
When you say you work on it, how do you work on it?
Meaning, how am I working on trying to enjoy the rose? By talking to myself about it. I think we all do that. Like, I think everyone has an inner dialogue. We all talk to ourselves about shit. Every one of us right now, us in front of the camera, the crew behind the camera, and definitely everybody who's watching, we know some shit right now that we wish we were doing better or something that's bothering us. And you know this, we all talk ourselves into a tipping point where we do something about it. I try to get better and better at making fixing it or making it better happen faster than dragging it out. That's what I'm working on.
Do you utilize like a resource, like a mentor or a group of guys or a therapist or?
Ish on all fronts. You know, I think not having a true, like my parents in a lot of ways are the only thing close to a mentor. You know, I need to be better at being a little bit more vulnerable with my inner circle. I was born in the Soviet Union. I came to America. My dad starts working every minute. He was never around because he was trying to provide for the family. My mom was only 20 years older than me. I had a sister who was 3 years younger. And as long as I can remember, I'm talking like 6, 7, my mom's like, you're the leader for your sister. And I grew up in the 80s. We'd go outside and play all day. So I actually had to keep an eye on her. And I was like 8 and she was 5 and we're just in the wild. You know, back in the day we did it different, you know? Like crossing the railroad. I mean, we would cross the street. Cars are like kids Frogger. Like, you know, like I had real, like, and it was just like ingrained in my mom, like you take care of her. I naturally had my personality. So I was definitely also like a leader amongst our friends. And so like, and then I started being very important in my family's liquor store business as a teenager. And by the time I was 22, I was running the business. It's always been on my shoulders. And I always felt like I was the guy, emotionally and financially, for everything that I've ever been a part of. You know, I didn't feel like I had permission for the vulnerability. I felt that if I showed cracks, everything would tumble. And so that's the era I grew up in. That, you know, and honestly, a lot of it works for me. 95% of the time, it works perfect. I like it. I want to take the last shot at the buzzer. Like, I want to be down. I want the Montana versus Bengals moment. Like, if I was ever a quarterback, please give me Super Bowl, last drive of the game, go to win it. Like, I live for that, right? I live for it. Even the pressure I put myself on when I do something like this. This isn't Super Bowl game winning drive, but I walk in subconsciously saying, I'd like to say something that really helps someone on the other side. When you say that to me, when I first walk in, that's everything. Like, why wouldn't you want to have a positive impact on other human beings? It's the best. So I like pressure, I like putting it on me, but I'm very self-soothing, meaning, I this is very left field, so bear with me, audience. There's something weird when I see a cat licking themselves, like, right? I've always been fascinated by it. I never understood why. I'm like, that's weird. Like I was, yeah. But I always would take note of it.
Oh, my guy's looking around like,
not, yeah, I'm sorry, everyone. But I'm really, like, in third grade, ninth grade, I always wondered, like, But
God, yeah, I told him not to do the cat thing. He's doing the cat thing again.
It's funny. The cat thing is like something a lot of people... Dustin, have you ever heard me talk about this? Maybe once or twice, right? This is not a thing I bring out often. But it's been in my mind. There's something I really enjoy of when I most am feeling pressure, the most it's not going well. I kind of like going into like the shower and like just like thinking. And like it's almost like a... action movie or like a superhero cartoon. Like I feel like I can fix myself. Mm-hmm. You know, like those sci-fi things where like they cut off the arm and the arm gets grown back in.
Yeah.
Scene. That's me emotionally. Like I get a lot of, I have this thing where I'm able to do it.
Right.
And I rely on that almost more than anything else. And I'm not sure if I look back at this clip in 20 years and be like, that was naive. I should have used more. And I can sense a piece of that.
Right.
But you know, it's really hard when you're 48 and you're this happy and you're not happy. I'm not happy because of my notoriety or financial reasons. I've always been like this.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been happy because I keep shit simple. I think people complicate life. Like you can have all the money, all the fame, all the sponsors, and then you guys are having a crushing week right now. It's cruising. I love watching you from a far building. But you know this, God forbid if you get a text right now and someone you love is in trouble, like health, like real shit. Mm-hmm. You don't give a fuck about this. And honestly, I think about that every day. Nothing I'm doing professionally matters. I'm completely detached from my success and notoriety. I just want the people I love to be healthy and good. I just want to wake up and play my game, which is being an entrepreneur. I always envied, I always wanted to be an athlete when I was a kid, like a lot of guys. But then when I got older, I was like, wait a minute. Athletes go through this such hardcore transition, like the thing you loved and were best at. You're gonna stop in football, late 20s? You're a child. If you're lucky, if it goes phenomenal, all-time phenomenal, mid-30s, late 30s, you're a child. A 37-year-old that's watching this right now has no comprehension of how young they still actually are. Society has taught us the wrong shit. Like you're supposed to have your life figured out at 22. It's ludicrous. Like, I don't know, I think, so these are the things that run through my mind and like are my emotional framework.
It seems like the best way, your best therapy is being by yourself with your thoughts.
Yes.
And
I'm my therapist, and there's something really powerful there. That being said, I've gone to therapy. I find it very valuable. I'm pumped people are doing it.
Yeah.
I love that people are doing ice baths. I love that people are doing, you know, meditation. I love that people are doing walks and exercise and reading. And like, I think just like anything in life, everybody who's watching, of the 7 to 10 things that we all know can make your life better, we all have a mix of the one or two that works best for us. My big thing to myself and to everyone is try them all and see what works for you. Like for, you know, and so I'm pumped when people sit and set out to meditate and that works for them. I feel like I'm meditating every minute. I feel like I'm meditating right now in the meta of this interview. I'm locked in with y'all and the audience, but there is a part of me in the back of my head right now that's also kind of like zenning out and was just like, isn't this great? Be grateful. Like gratitude, I think, is a currency that runs heavy through me. And I think it's something I want the world to be thinking about more because I think we spend way too much time complaining of what we don't have versus spending our energy on being grateful for what we do have.
You said something during all this about your process and everything of talking about the cat and being like, I might look back on this in 10, 15, 20
yeah.
years and be like, I probably should have gone about that a
yeah.
different way. Since you've been in the internet game for so long,
yes.
you can truly go look back
yes.
and essentially watch film on yourself, your
yes.
views, the way you approach stuff. What are some things you've looked back on in the past where you're like, okay, I can see where I navigated that incorrectly or not incorrectly, but I see things a little bit differently now?
This is a great question. And I really need people, you should be, it's a great question. It was really well done. It was pretty well done. It was very contextual to the moment, a little improv, but macro. I thought it was really good. The thing that stands out here, and this I'm excited about answering as well, things are contextual. So I think a thing that people beat people up about, this is why cancel culture is so flawed. People trying to rewind shit from 29 years ago and yell at people for what is a social norm now, shit changes. So when I was making videos in 2008 and being like, yo, you gotta go hard at 9 p.m. to midnight. At that point, everyone was out of a job. The economy collapsed and the internet was exploding. I was right. when someone like brings it up now, 15 years later, and be like, oh, people were burning out. I'm like, people didn't even know what the fuck burning out was then. People weren't worried about burnout. People were worried about fucking paying their bills. So I think a lot of what I look back at, what works for me, that I highly talk to a lot of content creators, influencers about, is like, never say something you don't believe. The amount of people that say shit that they don't believe in, only with the hope of going viral, is a fucking disaster. No million views is worth looking back at it and being like, you're an idiot. So the reason I don't have a lot of answers to your question is because everything that's ever come out of my mouth, I mean. Mm-hmm. So I feel good there.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting is to look back at context. I think the things that I think about is, I think the middle, purple, is the game. I think America's gotten way too red and way too blue. Mm-hmm. And purple is the magic. So when I look at things back, sometimes I didn't create a hedge or a context point to my overall thought. So if I'll give you a great one that's happening now. I'll break it fully down since we have a minute. As you two may know, and as some of the people who are watching who have seen my content, I believe in volume of content. I believe it's crazy for you to do this show with me and not put out 150 clips from the show. But when I say 150, people take it, and I don't do a good enough job to say, not 150 on Instagram, 150. For example, I think 12 YouTube Shorts posts from this are important because if you title it properly, YouTube's the second biggest search engine, and somebody might watch a clip from this in 3 years and discover you guys. Because YouTube works differently than TikTok. Then there's TikTok, then there's Facebook. Do you guys post clips on Facebook?
Yeah.
More. Because it's a supply and demand issue right now. I'm pretty sure you don't post on Pinterest. It's probably unlikely that you post on LinkedIn. LinkedIn, I would argue, is your biggest opportunity for your audience and how you roll. So when I think, but I'll say in a clip, I'll look back and be like, post 40 times a day. Mm. And people take it as like in their one channel and they're like, that's stupid, or I don't get it, or I can't. Another thing that I've been thinking through, for example, because I've been speaking of volume of content for 7 years, is I take for granted that I've made good content. You're making a good show. It has the potential to have 7 or 12 or 15 pieces of content. I think of things now more, and I've always thought of it this way, but I didn't articulate it, that it is a quality quantity framework. You should post 40 times a day over 7 different platforms if you have quality. Mm-hmm. Posting for the sake of posting is not gonna do anything for anyone. Mm-hmm. So I think about those kind of things where In the speed that I talk, because I get hyper and excited, in the fact that sometimes it's limited, you know, you only have limited time, we're trying to get to a lot of stuff. Sometimes I don't finish out all the sentences or all the context. And that sometimes out of context, I'm like, oh crap, I wish I added 2 more sentences because I know the audience took this out of context. There was, when people were making fun of me, of like, I was like, imagine your family being dead. And like, and that went super viral in TikTok. Yeah. I laugh at that because kids will roll up on me at the airport, like, imagine your family's dead. And I'm like, I realized that they didn't get the full context of what I was trying to say, which is like, if you actually did, you can imagine how grateful you'll be. But out of context, and then clipped or stitched, it can seem a little silly. So it's those full thought out things that I leave on the table at times that I would look back on and be like, ah, I wish I had 3 more sentences of context.
Yeah, because what was that quote? It's like, shoot him in the fucking
face. Yeah, imagine if someone, exactly. I'm trying to make it, in that talk that got clipped on, there was just a lot of like complaining. Like, just complaining and complaining. So by the time I got to the 18th question, I'm like, you guys are so entitled. Imagine horrible things, because horrible things do happen. As we sat here during this podcast, some bad things happen to people that is sad. They lost someone they loved. Like, bad stuff. And like, you know, I don't know how not to think about that. Like, there's almost 1 billion people on earth that don't have access to clean water. Do you know how insane that is? Like, I don't know. I don't know how to unsee that. There is literally 780 million people right now, predominantly in Africa and parts of India and parts of Asia, that literally within a 12-hour window can't get to a cup of fresh water. And then I have to listen to DMs about like, why don't I have $1 million?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't, like, do you understand that every human being that's in Las Vegas right this minute for this week should fucking kiss the ground and be fucking thankful as fuck? They have nothing to complain about in real 8 billion people in life. But that's not how life works. You live in your little reality.
Right.
And when shit goes awry within your reality, it's annoying because you have it so good and you haven't contextualized the macro perspective of how remarkable you're. There's no human watching this clip right now that doesn't have it awesome.
Yeah.
But many think they have it horrible. And especially with the way mainstream media and content creators on social media are talking, everyone's looking at the downside without looking at the upside.
Yeah, I was gonna go back to what you were talking about, working on being more vulnerable with the people in your circle.
Yes.
You obviously have a mind for business, like that's what drives
yes.
you. The process, like you are obsessed with it,
yes.
you love it. You have a good piece out there talking about balance, like there is no balance, do what you love, like all those sorts of things. But as like you spoke to it too, like being the leader in your household growing up, being a leader of your businesses, being a leader of your family, you do so well compartmentalizing and self-soothing and everything else. How do you, like, talk about the times you got to check yourself with checking the pulse of the people, like, in your family, in your household, to where your drive and your balance might be indirectly affecting them in a way that it just, the wall has been broken down to be like, hey, me being vulnerable here makes me feel better that I'm actually hearing this from you, Gary, because I didn't know you were actually going through that. And that helps the family grow with you because there's this bridge that starts
it's to real talk. It's real. It's real talk.
Ethic.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still a work in progress for me. And I also think people get comfortable in realities. Like, there's a lot of, like, peace of mind that I'm able to bring to the people I love the most by holding it fucking down. You know, and so like people love to say to the alpha, I'd love to have you be more vulnerable and tell us. But then when you go there, it's like, fuck. And it's shake. Like it's a really fascinating thing that's happening in society. There's this big conversation of like, we want our alphas, mom, grandma, dad, uncle, whoever it is, boss, to be more vulnerable. The reality is that there's a lot of insecurity in the world right now. And when the person that is your foundation starts to show cracks, people want to step up for that person, but often they're not the leader because they don't have the capacity to go there. Mm. I've flirted with vulnerability with everyone. I've also seen the reactions to it.
Yeah.
You know, we want more from bosses. Do you know if a boss went on and did an all company meeting, if she or he just said, all right, let me tell you what I'm dealing with, and here's all my pains and struggles and concerns, and we only have a month worth of cash flow, so if we don't get this, people are scared shitless.
Yeah.
And so like there's a real balance to this game. So I'm trying to find the purple.
Right.
A lot of people are talking shit that they want their alphas to go more vulnerable, but they don't. If you really pay attention to what people want. And so like this is a conversation that will play out in the next 20, 30 years. There's been plenty of razzing and demonization of alpha men over the last 20 years until we're in a war with China. I have a funny feeling that those alpha dudes that everybody likes to razz on, when shit hits the fan, they'll be cheering the fuck out of them.
Right.
So that's just the way the world always worked. People just are very bad at history lessons.
I love that answer. And I also love the Gary B. smirks that he gets.
Like, yeah, when I know, yeah.
Yeah, because smirk that you're used to just
so the consumer can sit there and be like digested for a second
yeah.
before it's the next sentence.
Yeah.
The dramatic pause is a go-to.
How about imposter syndrome. Somebody with
AKA the new funny word that we've made it. Imposter syndrome, I'm sorry to interrupt. Imposter syndrome, you mean what we used to call insecurity?
Yeah.
The packaging of insecurity as imposter syndrome has me laughing my ass off, and I'm glad I got to finally address it. I've said it maybe one other place. Like, yes, what about insecurity?
I was gonna say in your very like early stages, like YouTube, and you're taking your
never
work, your
not in this game, no,
and putting
never,
it out there,
never,
in
not bad, not bad. Hitting on girls in high school, yes, I know what insecurity looks like, but not in business.
Okay.
The day I did that
social
first video,
media,
you ready for this? The day I did that first video, in my head, driving home, I said to myself, I'm gonna fucking win this. I'm gonna be known. I'm gonna be the most important in wine business. Literally first one, because I knew I was gonna grind it. I don't know if I'm gonna buy the New York Jets. You know why? I'm not fully in control, but I know I'm gonna give it a real fucking run.
Right.
You know, if the Johnsons put it up for sale tomorrow, I'm out. I just don't have enough money yet. But if they hold on to it in the range that I think they'll hold on to it, 18, 20, 16, 24 years, I'm in the mix. I believe that to be true.
So you're saying your foundation, your cloth, was built as this world of social media, comments, seeing negativity, was there, but like as this stuff transpired and transcended into what is to what?
In high school, no one's opinion or peer pressure even remotely came to penetrate the way I walked around. I think that's the toughest environment.
Yeah.
I didn't know it. This is fun to say as a 48-year-old man. In my late 20s, mid-30s, when I started being like, whoa, I was a weird kid in high school. I was friends with everyone. That was based on me not caring that my cool friends were making fun of me for hanging out with my not cool friends. I didn't care. I wasn't willing to compromise on kindness. In the 90s, in New Jersey, in high school, there was no way to get to the upper echelon of popularity without being a dick face. You had to make fun of people. Mm-hmm. It just was the currency.
Right.
I wasn't willing to go there. And
that, where'd you learn that? Like, how'd you have that?
My mom.
Because it's like everybody deals with it. I could even think of myself being like, damn, you see somebody talk shit about how you played in the game. I'm thinking I'm in my 20s at this point. But in high school, that stuff, I'm just trying to imagine somebody that's just uncompromised.
I'm detached from results, even though I want them. Mm-hmm. Meaning, when someone says stuff, I'm just, first of all, there's a lot to it. Let's break it down. Because we're bouncing. People shitting on you in social media should not be met with you being upset for you. It should be met with you being compassionate to them. Do you know how fucking sad a life is that you walk around the internet and make fun of people or try to hurt people because you're in such a bad place? Saying that you guys suck at this podcast is a little endorphin hit for that person for a nanosecond to feel better about how bad they feel about themselves. All they're doing is tearing you down. They're just misery loves company you. I swear to God, every single negative post that I see about me or in the comments, I literally, my brain fundamentally only says, man, I hope that person's gonna be okay one day. Not one thing about me. That has nothing to do with me. But there's a key to that. I also don't take in when people give me the flowers. Appreciative as fuck.
Live for the cheers, die by the booze type of thing.
Bro. That shit, if we could get the kids, fucking forget the kids, everyone who's watching this, every grown-up to understand, if you become susceptible to the fucking cheering, you're dead. Because the booing will kill you. I'm grateful for when people leave goat emojis. I wish you could see what I felt like with your opening line on the show. It's like, thank you, it's so nice. But I don't think I'm special because you said it. Which means I don't think I'm a piece of shit when you say the return. Mm-hmm. I know who I am. The end. And unless you really, 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 really know me, how the fuck can I even count it? Mm-hmm. Do you know how many famous people that are universally adored are straight pieces of shit?
Probably a lot.
Yeah, you always hear the stories. You never want to meet your heroes.
Right.
It's real talk. It sucks. I mean, currently right this second, universally adored. They're the best. No, they're not. They sure aren't. They do not treat their people well. Everybody that's close to them does not love them. I can go to sleep every night and put my head on a pillow because the more you know me, the more you like me, those are the results I see.
When you talk about people that really, really, really know you, how many people would you say really, truly know who Gary Vee is?
Zero. And let me break down where I was going with that.
That's a context one.
Yeah, I was.
If you say that, hey, we're clipping that just so we can get.
Right.
And then we'll have you come on again to us.
I'm
going to be about the with this man.
Yeah. I'm obviously going tongue in cheek because I wanted to make 2 points.
Yeah.
So the answer to your question on that one, the way you actually asked it, probably 100.
Yeah.
Like if I'm going to like where I'm really going.
Yeah.
Like would you bet your like if they went to someone in that if they went to Brandon Warnke, my best friend who I've known since 14 and talked to every day and still runs winetext.com, like if they said bet your life on him, he would.
Yeah.
Like 100, right? 70 to 100. I'm very fortunate. Like I always judge leaders of business on the longevity of their team. We took a flight out here, a lot of the Vayner people. We've been in business for 14 years. 7, 10, 12 people that have been with the company for 10. Mm-hmm. In advertising, that has an average of 2. Like, that feels great. When I look, I'm like, man, I'm so proud of that. That's only a reflection of how much I actually care about them. So I would say 100 to the way you asked it. The reason I said zero was I wanted to make a point that I'm curious to ask you to. The thing that I'm most fascinated by is that the only person on earth that fully knows you is you. Because you're the only person that's been there for every single actual thing. Everybody can watch this, and you too as well. There's certain things that nobody on earth knows about you besides you. I think that's fascinating, and I've been thinking a lot about it, which is why I wanted to throw out that fun answer.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah, you
said please.
A great point. Like Taylor and I, we have this saying, like, nobody's coming to save you. Like, you know, if you think about it, you're the only one who lays your head on your pillow, and no matter who's next to you with whatever stresses you have in your mind, and ultimately it is just
truly
you and you, like that one player game of you knowing yourself.
Bro, in such a real way. And my big thing is, like, how do I, you know, one of the things that drives me is I feel a little bit of guilt of how lucky I got with my DNA, how lucky I got that I was born in a shit country and came to America with nothing and had a really humble beginning, because I think it's advantage. Adversity is foundation of success, I believe that. And then on top of everything else, with those two good things already going for me, fucking the world gave me the best mom of all time that fucking molded and built me. I feel a level of guilt about it. I believe that Gary Vee exists because of that guilt. Mm-hmm. And gratitude, it's a mix of those two. All I do is try to figure out how to do what my mom did for me. Like, all I want to do with my content is build true self-esteem, not eighth place trophy self-esteem, which is actually leading to a lot of insecurity. Merit self-esteem. And a lot of that led to me with me. I like myself. Most people don't. And it shouldn't be like that. Everyone watching should like themselves. They're just focusing on the wrong things. Parents are beating themselves up every day. They're parents are trying. Like, of course you're not gonna be perfect. There's not a soul on earth that becomes a grown-up that doesn't have plenty of things to say about their parents.
Yeah.
It's the rules, no matter how hard you try.
Yeah, you had a unique conversation, it was like a TED Talk type of situation where you're talking about, like, work-life balance is almost non-existent, but just if you're trying in all phases, you're phenomenal.
I think so. What's work-life balance? Everyone has their own rules.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have friends that think work-life balance is 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. Okay. Like, I have other friends that think it's 9 to 7, Monday through Friday. Okay. I have other friends that think it's 9 to 9, Monday through Saturday. Okay. Like, as long as the people in your circle are cool with it, like, there's all sorts of, there's a cost to everything. There's just real life circumstances. Like, the big thing that I focus on is when I talk about shit, I'm not trying to tell everyone that I'm right about what I'm talking about. I'm not trying to convince anyone. I'm trying to share observations with the hope that it helps someone. That's a very different framework. I don't think the thing I talk about is applicable to everyone. That's insane. I just think that I love observing and have been doing it for a long time. I don't even talk from my framework. Most of the stuff that comes out of my mouth is not just me, it's what I've lived in combination to what I've observed for the last 30 years, because that's what I do for a living. I pay attention for a living. That's why I have an advertising firm. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm interested in the collective, but that will never be the reflection of an individual. Gen Z, when people are like, Gen Z suck. I'm like, are you a fucking idiot? Do you know how many Gen Z kids I know right now are grinding their asses off and have incredible work ethic? And do you know how many lazy boomers I know? To just blanket paint these observations is wild. Are there rationales to why there's general statements? Sure. Are those things sometimes, like, pretty close to unknowns? Sure. Like, I get it. But, like, nothing is directly one by one.
Mm, right.
That goes to one-on-one, you with you.
Mm-hmm.
Only you know. And you have to make yourself happy, because you can't make anyone else happy unless you're happy.
Right.
That's real.
I love it. I know, we're getting the spinning wheel of death in the back there, so.
Oh, come on, bro, we're rolling here.
Can we
go into overtime?
You hit yours, I have another career too that I think would be a lot of fun.
What's that?
I said, nothing, he was talking about
you. Oh, no, you go ahead, you go ahead.
I was wanting to get into, okay, you have Vayner Sports Media.
Yes.
You have your agency.
Yes.
NIL.
Yes.
Getting into that, like, you obviously represent, or your company represents.
Yeah, Vayner Sports has plenty of NIL.
Correct.
And pro athletes,
and
yes.
So you're getting into the world of college.
Yes.
I just got off the phone this morning with a college coach. And
yes.
Said, man, you know, there's always a new thing of, like, how
yes.
the NIL is just out of control. He's like, bro, I'm telling you, every player in the end of year meetings sat, they gave a number, and said if they don't get that number,
they're going to transfer.
Because they all have representation.
I love it.
What is your thought
love.
On the NIL world?
Love. Here's why. Not because I'm in the NIL business. That's called capitalism. Mm-hmm. I love all my capitalistic friends. I have a lot of, this is the, my number, I've got such a fun answer for this. Ready?
Yeah.
My life, because I'm in the business. Unlimited entrepreneurs, unlimited dinner and drinks with very well-to-do individuals who love their universities and are boosters to the universities, complaining about NIL. Unlimited. I'm like, let me get this straight. You are a real estate mogul. You had a free capitalistic American market to make money, and you loved it. You have benefited from being able to have the market be an open market, and now you're gonna sit here and tell me that you like communism? What do I think about NIL? I think it's fair. I think the University of Alabama made a fuckload of money over the last 20 years. And do I think that the humans that directly impacted that are entitled to an opportunity to be a piece of the action? I sure do. Because I love capitalism. And for every hypocrite that is into entrepreneurship and capitalism and fucking alpha this and winning and competition, you better shut your fucking mouth about NIL, because you are a fucking hypocrite if you don't like it. Oh, you mean you don't like that you liked it in the past because your college was good and these new rules may reset the deck? That I understand. You're a diehard UT fan and you're sad, or you're a diehard Notre Dame. Like, I get it.
Nebraska.
I get it. I see it. I'm going for some Razzy stuff. I'm trying to get some emotions. It worked. It worked. You know, like, yeah, man. I think it's, what do I think about it? I think it's fair.
I love
and,
it.
And people that are crying about it, fucking buckle up.
I love
compete.
I love the answer.
I love that.
Now put yourself on the board of looking at the structure compared to, like, you look at the professional market in the NFL, contracts and everything
yep.
else.
Yep.
The college world is more of just anybody can leave at any point in time.
Yep.
If you're on the, if you're sitting on the other end of the table
yep.
advising that board, what would be your opinion about
Let's push for contracts. You know what the best part about merit is? You can adjust. Notice how they're not running fast to contracts. Why? It works for them too.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. He gave me the look too, so it's almost like
24.
Yeah, that's how they get
like,
the
cool.
Yeah.
If you don't like NIL, you hate America and you hate capitalism.
One, by the way,
Boom.
By the way, and pretty non-debatable. I can't wait for the rebuttal to why not. It's either merit and capitalism or it's not.
Hey, bro, that's...
It's crazy. Just, it's binary.
Yeah. Because yeah. I was always sat there, I was like, you know, maybe some rules and regulations would be great. Literally, it took this conversation to know absolutely.
Because I think to myself, I'm like, yeah, they do have to get it figured out because it is kind
and
of
by the way,
wild
they can.
Wild, it's a wild west
by the way,
out yeah. there, yeah.
It's the Wild West, like every other business on earth.
Because you think about it, as football players... We look at it as like,
of course.
When we went to school,
of course.
NIL, there's like, there's got to be a sense of loyalty. The University
of course.
Michigan, it's the best of these kids nowadays. They're built
of course.
Soft.
Of course.
Kind
of course.
All it takes is one.
Do you
guy
do you know?
A
do you
second answer? And you're like, well, fuck.
And let me guys, and let me and
hey, we're actually,
hey,
little nod,
let me
smile.
Let me give you something. let me give you a little something on top of it that you guys are gonna like, because you've met the OGs.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing that, and I get why you're doing that. What about the Hall of Fame offensive lineman? Who played an entire career and made less money than the seventh offensive lineman of every team in the NFL right now?
Which is
know,
a great
bro.
Point because we had it. So we had on.
Also, the economy was worse than.
Get out of here.
Hey, soda pop.
Hey, ready?
You guys should have saved your
money. You ready? Ready for this? Run the inflation numbers. Y'all did better.
You're right.
I know you did better.
I see the median. I see what's going on here. Maybe I'm the house cut out now to 270% in the last
yeah.
3 years, though.
Yeah, because we've sat with, we've had Ed McCaffrey on, Marshall Faulk. We,
yep.
we had an older interview with
yep.
Mike Allstott, and it's
yep.
like they walk out of the room, and you're like, man, we are, in our world, in the whole alpha, it's like, you know, we are so much softer than that. What that generation was based on.
Of course, and their granddaddies literally were playing at college football and then an hour later had to go to Germany and die. Like, I don't understand how people don't have history lessons.
It's so funny you say that. Even when I was playing, Gary, we got
Gary beating up the history lessons.
Did anyone take history in fucking high school? Like, what the fuck?
Next time Garrett comes in the show, we need to put a camera behind you. So you kind of look like back,
I need more cameras next time. All right, my, now my team's yelling at me. I got to get the fuck out of here, but I'm rooting for you guys heavy. Congrats. By the way, real flowers, I also love your audience. I read comments for a living. The way your audience love y'all, the demo, and just the vibe of this whole thing, it's real good. I'm so glad we did this. Thank you.
Dude, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was an honor, man.
Pleasure.
This was an honor.
Thank you, man.